You're listening to the Asheville FM News Hour on WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Andrew Rainey, and today I'm joined over the phone with Durham-based performance artist and activist, as well as kinship minister of Soul Force, Grace Nichols. Grace, thanks for joining me on Asheville FM.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I wonder, first of all, if you'd like to begin giving listeners some context for some of your work in Durham.
Sure. I'm relatively new to Durham, but coming up on 3 years. But community connections run deep, and I'm currently serving as the kinship minister for an organization called Soul Force. And we work globally in coalition with many different orgs to bring attention, in particular, to weaponized religion and Christian supremacy, and particularly its impacts on LGBTQ folks and other marginalized people. And then I'm also a member leader for an organization called Southerners on Your Ground, an intentionally intersectional organization, ensuring that anti-racism work is happening within queer liberation movements and that an analysis of gender and sexuality is present across social justice movements generally. And our main campaigns are Ending Money Bell and Melting Ice.
I've seen via your online presence some reflections on the way public narrative of COVID-19 has emerged and some challenges to those narratives. I wonder if you could share what you've seen regarding dominant narrative and your response to that.
Sure. I think I had posted something around, in the beginning reportings, I was pretty checked out, not really paying attention because a lot of the reports from many national news outlets as well felt very racially charged, very racist at their core, speaking frequently to the dishonesty of the Chinese government. And I think that really led people astray to how they should be paying attention to this virus and its spread. So it really made me think about the ways that undue panic is unleashed on our cultures that really keep us disconnected from one another. So while I was checked out at the beginning, I quickly began to realize how seriously we need to be taking this moment, as well as finding the groundedness to not be acting out of fear, to move in a way that keeps us present and connected rather than reactionary.
How would you respond to those reactionary narratives, and what does it look like to mobilize in Durham around a different kind of narrative?
Certainly. I feel lucky to be in Durham. Durham is a really wonderful place for organizing for social justice communities. In response to the virus spread, I quickly saw many people mobilizing, organizing, particularly around mutual aid and resource distribution. I saw many people organizing conference calls, Zoom chats, online meetings where we could check in with one another and see what our needs are, and then see who is available to support those needs and ensure we're also really being thoughtful about who are the most vulnerable in our communities, whether that's in our individual lives, people with pre-existing health concerns, extending to a lot of the social justice campaigns that we've been working on, which aim to support folks who are incarcerated, folks without homes. The thing that really I think this virus is exposing are really our inequitable systems that we have in place. And if we were in a society where we actually cared for houseless people, disabled, incarcerated, elderly people in a more equitable way, it wouldn't be such a nerve-wracking time, because we would have systems in place where we knew people wouldn't be as vulnerable, and you'd have systems where you could care for them and support them more easily. That being said, I've seen my community really doing our best to be in touch with each other. There's been some specific groups for queer and trans people to make sure that folks have the meds that we need, whether that's hormones or hormone injection supplies or rides to doctor's appointments, to just sharing resources and joy, just to make sure that we can move through this time in a resilient way.
I wonder if you could speak about some of those resources people are finding to handle that situation?
Sure, yeah. I think the resource I shared today was someone named Marisol Jimenez, and that person is Asheville-based and has a counseling service, Semillas Counseling, I believe. And my take on a lot of those resources were really grounding. I think that the overall awareness I think that organizer communities have is that if we wait on the current governmental infrastructures, our healthcare system, to take care of us, we've known for a long time that our systems are insufficient for that, particularly our healthcare system. If we do not take personal precautions right now, then we will be asking a lot of our healthcare system, particularly our practitioners, who in real time will be having to make life or death decisions. And we don't want to have to put our healthcare practitioners in that spot any more than they already have to be because of our culture being so capitalist and our healthcare being so inaccessible. You know, what we've seen is this crisis has already been real for so many people. There are people who are living day to day wondering if they're going to make it to the next day. And so while it's rightfully a stressful time, you know, the encouragement that I've seen is really to find and focus on the things that keep you grounded, that still cultivate joy and ensure that we know that we're all in this together. And to me, it's also about recognizing our power as people to make choices that support one another. So the resources from Marisol are really lovely in the ways that they bring awareness to, you know, how we need to be thinking about our mental health during this time, how we as a culture are scared of death and dying in general, you know, and how that impacts our behaviors. I think in general, it's a big exposure of fear and how fear-based our culture is. And on a bigger scale, if we can examine that and reorient ourselves away from fear and towards action that is actually liberating or bringing joy and healing to one another, I think we can see a lot of shifts.
One of the pieces I saw on a post of yours was reflecting a little bit on ableism and the importance of not panicking. And I wonder if you could speak a little about that.
Sure. I framed it as, I think I had put healthy in quotation marks and not sick right now in quotation marks, because ability is a spectrum and people are not just disabled or not disabled. And again, this is like a calling for us to be more thoughtful about how we think about these things, because, you know, some of the narrative, a lot that I've seen be really painful for a lot of disabled or immunocompromised folks that I know is that, you know, this virus will quote unquote only affect the vulnerable. But, you know, the vulnerable are many of us. And there's also, you know, our parents and grandparents. And the exposure of the inequities really tells us, you know, who our culture values and who it doesn't. And so the call is to really consider all the vulnerable populations as us, as our neighbors, as valuable humans who don't deserve to be written off just because they are disabled. I wish I could remember the name, but there was a person I think I included on my post who put on Twitter about how many of these requests, working remotely, being extra careful about spreading germs. Previously, if they would come at the request of a disabled person, would be perceived as too difficult or impossible. Yet when there's a broader threat to people who are considered more able, all of a sudden our culture can shift. So there's many, many lessons. You know, we don't want to be dismissive or reductive in this time because people are really struggling and really nervous. But that being said, there's great opportunity here to examine many of our systems that bring death and harm to many marginalized populations and to rework the way that we do things in the world. And then also to become activated and participate more in redistributing some of our resources and time to make sure that next time, next crisis on any level is not as stressful, because we will have learned to take care of each other a little bit better. I'll just say quick, Carrie Higgins is the person on Twitter who was exposing how many of the special accommodations are not possible because able-bodied people are asking for them.
This is News Team correspondent Andrew Rainey, and today I'm speaking with Durham-based performance artist and activist, as well as kinship minister for Soul Force, Grace Nichols, about COVID-19.
A couple of things I've seen are, well, public school systems are rallying together to ensure the students, many lower income students, depend on meals at school. So making sure that we have lunches available for our students who are depending on that meal at school. I saw one thing about pairing younger folks with elderly folks in the community and in the neighborhood to make sure that there is direct communication and contact information exchange, so that if the older person needs meds picked up, needs a store run, that there is someone available who can meet their needs quickly. There's a lot of economic implications at this moment, and the hardships will fall on our food service industry folks, hourly workers, artists, you know, people who own small businesses, restaurants and bars. So there's been lots of spreadsheets where people can list their needs and people can sign up to donate or support in the ways that they can. I think we have to be really mindful, as well as our really vulnerable populations, such as those who are incarcerated, those held in ICE detention, people without houses who are staying in shelters. There is a petition for grassroots organizers to be aware of and sign onto, which gives guidance of sort of demands that you can make to your local governments regarding making sure that local governments are thinking about how to, for homeless folks, encouraging people that are extraneously in jail to be let out. But that to me and any abolitionist mind is everyone should be out of jail, and so there should be a call to release as many people as possible out of jail because of the immense risk they will face. You know, there are workers going in and out every day. It's a very precarious situation, and certainly incarcerated people are people that our society deems as disposable. But again, those are our family members. Those are people we know. And when we apply a race analysis, those are many people who have been labeled as criminals for no reason other than being black or a person of color in this country. So again, this is further peeling back the layers of the unjust and inequitable systems in our culture.
If listeners were interested in following up with thoughts that you've shared today, or are interested in referencing back to some of these topics, do you have any recommended websites or places where people can follow you or related topics that we've been covering?
Sure, I can name them, and then I'm happy to send them to you. I can send, the last one I mentioned is called Demands from Grassroots Organizers Concerning COVID-19. I certainly encourage everyone to set up their own spreadsheets for mutual aid, either within your neighborhood or your friend group. A quick tip I saw on Twitter today is, unfortunately, the racialized spin has caused some to be really distrustful of this virus is even a concern, and that comes from a lot of anti-communist rhetoric in American culture. And then sort of the link there is that extends to a lot of older populations. And the tip I saw on Twitter today is that apparently the AARP website has been proven beneficial for older populations who might be skeptical of what to believe right now. It's important just that everybody stay well informed, to be grounded, and that they're not becoming distrustful for racist reasons or otherwise. A bit about not overwhelming our healthcare systems. I got a lot of the information from, and my wife sent me an article in The Atlantic. A summary of that article is, it comes from information that we've gotten from people in Italy, and it comes from a moral philosophy professor who is speculating who's hearing from doctors in Italy about the life or death decisions they have to make, about, you know, prioritizing people they believe will survive. And that's a situation that nobody wants to be in. In addition to that decision alone, our healthcare practitioners themselves will begin to get sick, and so we will see a decline in available support. And that, it not only includes people who are affected by the virus, but any other medical need at that time. So if anybody has any kind of emergency and our healthcare systems are overwhelmed, then we're all in a very, very dangerous situation. So there's more resources surrounding prepping for quarantine, particularly if you are a disabled person. More financial solidarity spreadsheets. See one that's national, but check in your communities to see what mutual aid spreadsheets are already created and being distributed, so you know that where you can contribute, where you can reach out for support if you need it. Because there's so much misinformation about the symptoms of the virus, I would encourage folks to really seek out the accurate information. Because, I mean, it's also flu season, it's also allergy season, and this also lends to ensuring we don't overwhelm our healthcare systems if we don't need to. I think that there is a COVID-19 helpline where people can call, and I think a lot of hospitals and health insurances are also offering either online or via phone consultations to make sure that people aren't coming to facilities or coming to care places and potentially bringing the virus with them if they don't have to. I'm sure that this statistic has changed, but last time I checked, there was some 80% of the population will be fine and it's manageable if we stay at home and we don't spread the virus. But, you know, there's the 20% of people that we have to really, really be mindful of, and to not be out, especially in crowded places or in even small groups of people right now, because the risk is too high.
We've been speaking with Kinship Minister for Soul Force, as well as performance artist and activist, Grace Nichols, out of Durham. Grace, thank you so much for spending this time with us today. I wonder, are there other points that feel important to plug in before we sign off?
Thank you for inviting me, first of all. It's my pleasure to speak with you, since you are Asheville-based. I would be remiss to not lift up my good friend, Nicole Townsend, and her colleagues, Kim Ronnie, as far as the work that they're doing in Asheville in responding to the crisis. And I'd say, general, be in touch, be in community with each other, find the things that ground you and bring you joy. I've seen things from, you know, online karaoke parties, online dance parties. I'm doing an online comedy set in a couple of weeks. And as complicated as it may seem, this feels like an opportunity to revive some of our beliefs in one each other, in each other, to do right by one another and survive this.
We'll post some of the links mentioned on the Asheville FM website, where you can go later to hear the archive or find more information, www.ashevillefm.org. Grace Nichols, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Be sure to check out the website for any of the links we talked about today, found under Community News on the website ashevillefm.org. Thanks for listening.